coming at you again from Mount Juliet, Tennessee.
Oh, yeah.
On the east side of Nashville. Let's talk about that.
East side represent.
I am John. Here's my friend Johnny.
Yes.
And, man, we are thrilled. You always say, what if we weren't? But this time, I actually am, Johnny.
I'm getting in the, I feel it today.
You're feeling it? It's a good day.
Today, because today, later on, we have a guest.
We have a guest. And here's the deal. We know it's happening.
Because we already recorded it. Whereas before, sometimes we've teased something, and it's like, oh, it didn't work
and
out.
And it doesn't show
up. We have to
up,
edit out ourselves saying it.
Right. Something breaks. But listen, bro, we're producing. We're producing today.
Yeah.
Like,
you're better at it. I need to learn all your ways.
Well, I don't know. People would laugh if they knew. I mean, like, I know just enough about technology to
there's a lot of wires going everywhere, and there's gear that's just...
There's been some experimentation happening.
Hither and thither.
Do you know what this piece of gear is next to me right here?
It's the old Scarlet Thread soundboard.
I went downstairs into one of the storage rooms and dug out the old Scarlet Thread board because I needed to run a single signal, blah, 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 blah. And let me tell you something, it still works.
Well, we haven't plugged like all our instruments into it and seen if we could make quality Christian rock.
Well, that's true. We have not done that. Although the reunion's still going to happen, bro. No, it's not. But there are some good songs I wouldn't mind hearing you. I would still love to hear you play the solo on the song Shadow still. I would love that.
John, that's so sweet.
Johnny W. is one of the best blues guitar players you ever heard in your life.
I'm trying to figure out how to work electric guitar into the comedy set.
Saying that about 3 years now.
I know.
Why don't you just stand up there with your electric and do something?
Well, I have some shows coming up, some ticketed events that we just signed the contract for in May. And it's going to be just me. There's going to be an opener, and then Compassion is underwriting some of the tour, and they're going to be a partner with us on tour.
Right.
Compassion International, which I'm a huge believer in. So we're going to get kids sponsored, and we're going to tell jokes, and it's going to be so cool. And I think that'll be the shows where I need a new, like, 15-minute chunk of something that's a little bit of a gear change. That might be the time to break out the electric, we think.
I think it's a great idea. Because you really can, and just gonna it's going to show another facet. To the prism that is Johnny. You know what I'm saying? Like all the things that could be there. No, you really are. Johnny's a great guitar player.
We
used to enjoy playing together, man.
Yeah, I still noodle around, but I mean, I play mostly acoustic in the shows. I play all acoustic in the shows, but then at home, I'll noodle around. I have what's called a gitalele. It's a six-string ukulele.
Yeah.
And so you play it like a guitar, but it pling, pling, pling. It's very weird. But I can hold it, you know, really close to me and just pick around. So when I'm watching TV, almost always I'm picking around on the gitalele. Sometimes I'll be on the phone with somebody and they'll be like, are you playing a ukulele in the background while talking to me?
My 20-year friendship with you,
yeah,
that is a given. Often I hear you playing guitar. We used to hang out at your house in Knoxville. Mm-hmm. You were always
noodling around
playing a guitar. Yeah, on
yeah,
the couch.
When I was a kid, before I had the guitar, I picked up a guitar at 18. My first instrument was piano. I was playing piano at age 6 or 7.
What?
And I was my mom bought this upright piano, you know, for $300 and put it in our den. And I was learning to hear songs by ear, and she let me write on the keys A B C D E F G.
You use a sticker or nothing?
No, I just wrote with a permanent marker, and I was learning worship songs, and I was learning all this, and I didn't know chords yet, but I was getting there. I was starting to learn chord structures, and my mom was like so thrilled. And so by the time I was in third grade, she put me in. So what would that have been? 8 years old. She put me in music class.
Yeah.
At school. And gave me a piano teacher, and he immediately said, forget whatever you've learned. This is the structure. You need to practice this much a day. And it was all music theory and weird stuff. And I got so frustrated, I quit like 2 weeks in, and I never picked up an instrument again until I was 18. I picked up a guitar. And my mom's always blamed herself for that. She was like, if I just let you go, you would be a virtuoso.
You were like, yes.
No, probably not. Who knows? But, I mean, self-taught is one way to do it. But even on the guitar, I learned a lot from other folks. But all that said, I picked up guitar at 18. And, yeah, there's just something about it I like it. But before that, I have a lot of nervous energy as a kid. I was very introverted, but I had nervous energy. So I would juggle.
You know, they'd probably have a diagnosis for that.
They probably would.
Yeah,
you've talked about that, we'd both probably be on the spectrum somewhere if you're
nervous energy is what we called it then.
Yeah.
Right.
But I would juggle. I taught myself to juggle. And so any three objects in a room, I would try to figure out if I could juggle them. And so I bruised every piece of fruit in my mother's house, and lamps were broken, and... just stupid. I could juggle 8-pound bowling balls when I was like a teenager.
Really?
Yeah, 3 8-pound bowling balls I could juggle. Only for like a few turns, and then I'd it's hard to catch the third one when you're stopping.
Feels like a toe breaking, just waiting to happen.
It could have been.
Yeah,
it could have been. I had trick ankles back then too, for sure. So it could have been back then. Well, it's true. I guess. I'm basically a marionette down there. It's just all wobbly. It's like a hinged situation. But no, so I had a lot of. So that was the thing. The guitar filled that void for me.
Yeah.
So now when I'm watching a show, I think I have to have my hand, my fingers moving. So that's something it kind of does for me, I guess. Curry has to be irritated by it, but she never has told me to stop.
I think Curry's a special person.
She's something else.
Yeah. I don't think she. It doesn't seem like that your idiosyncrasies seem to.
Yeah.
They don't seem to bother her.
That's a true love right there.
Absolutely. You know?
Because it's not like we knew everything there was to know about each other when we got married.
Oh, you can't.
Like, I was 21, she was 19. There's no way.
No.
You're going to, and even if you are locked in and you know that person as they are, they're going to keep growing into something else.
Right. We always say that. Yeah. If you're not the person I married, well, of course you're
that's
not.
Right.
And I'm also not the person I was when I was 14. Like, yeah. You know, things are going to keep changing.
But it's just, it so happens that there's an acceptance to the good and the bad. And that's, to me, that's just the best thing about marriage. And my wife just went on a trip with me and it was so cool. And
it's kinda, Philadelphia, right?
We had a show in Atlanta and then we flew from Atlanta to Philadelphia to do a show near there in like the Dutch country, Pennsylvania Dutch country. So we flew into Philly, but we stayed there an extra night so we could have fun in Philly. And that's some of her favorite stuff is in Philly. She loves the history, but her favorite thing is the Mütter Museum.
Mütter.
It's named after a doctor with an umlaut over there, over the U.
Oh, okay.
So it's a Mütter.
Umlaut.
Looks like mutter, but it's Mütter.
Yeah.
And he was a scientist in the 1800s who was pioneering. He pioneered a lot of like preservation of medical studies and things like that.
I thought you were going to say he was pioneer like plumbing, like Rotomütter. anyway, sorry.
No, John. Rotomütter. I think I heard of this guy. But it's almost as gross as Rotomütter. Like, this museum is like, let's say there's a woman, like, for instance, you go down there and there's one thing in a display case, and it looks like something out of a horror movie. It looks like something out of Stranger Things.
Oh, yeah, you look at
it's like a giant slug, and it's a distended colon tumor that they removed from a lady in 1882, and they still have it.
They preserved
it.
Like, it looks like flesh is what you're saying. It's so not like dried out.
There's a chart in the museum. It's a medical history museum and a medical oddities museum is how they preserve it or is how they present it. So the banner out front says, what does it say? Disturbingly informative. That's their big tagline. And it is disturbing, but it's Curry's favorite place in the world. She could stay 6 hours in there.
Wow.
So it's everything from the woman who grew a horn, like a sebaceous horn, like an overabundance of keratin caused this woman to basically project this weird hair fingernail horn from the top of her head.
Wow.
And she didn't cut it for 6 years. And then they finally cut it off. And so there's like a wax figure of what this woman looked like in a couple of photos. And then there's a picture of another horn they removed from another person who had a similar malady. And so it's a disgusting place, but I would recommend it highly. It's like, it's so weird. There's a whole thing about, you would love this one, there's a whole wing of it that's about Civil War and the medical things that they had to deal with in the Civil War, like, you know, people getting gut shot and then, like, you're almost always going to die a slow, painful death if you get shot in the head or the gut. But you could survive a limb shot because they would cut off your limb, but even then it was, and then you go through this horrible, but there's, like, actual bones of Civil War soldiers. Like a femur that they show what the musket ball did to the femur. You're looking at it in a case. It's really interesting and bizarre. But she loved it.
Wow.
And then there's a whole wing of it that's just like circus freaks that were manipulated for money in the 1800s and early 1900s, like conjoined twins and what they went through. And you see kind of their stories. It's kind of humanizes them.
Yeah.
And it's super cool. But Curry loves it it's like, it's too much. At one point, I was like, can we? Because literally, we left there to go get cheesesteak.
I hope you ate lunch before.
We did. We left there. We left after looking at the distended colon and went and got a cheesesteak.
You know what that looks like to me? Let's go get me a cheesesteak.
It was weird, but yeah, she loves it. But being on the road with her is so cool and it's so fun. And she's always such a big help. I used to say when I would travel with somebody like Evan, who was one of my college students and became a dear friend of mine, and he traveled with me. And I always say, like, when you travel with somebody like that, you can dump on them a little bit. I can be like, look, when we get to return this rental car, you need to grab this bag. We need to run because we're late.
Yeah.
But when you're with your wife, you kind of, okay, baby. Now, sweetie, we got to kind of, you know what I'm saying? You got to go in, you got to go in husband mode. Yeah. You got to be more of a caregiver. But she's so evolved to the point now where she knows the deal.
Yeah.
It's like an unspoken thing of like, I don't have to even apologize that we got to get in here and we got to, this is work time. And it's such a cool, like, unspoken thing now between us, and she loves doing it, so it's awesome.
Well, my wife and I both travel probably more than the average person, you know? And so when we travel in airports, we both are very efficient, generally, except those times I'm with you and I leave my wallet in the hotel or whatever.
That's right.
But normally, and so when we're taking Sadie and going somewhere, all three of us, we could both kind of go into that mode. And yes, it's nice because we're both TSA pre-check, you know, all those things, but when you get behind somebody who does not travel well, and you hate to be that person, but it's very like, I mean, well, we're flying through doing what we do, you know, like leave your shoes on. You don't have to take them off through this part. Do, you know, like it's just that, but it is great to travel with those who travel. Not that I mind traveling with those who don't, but yes.
I show mercy to those who need mercy. No, she's a pro. And it was so cool having her. 'Cause like I had four bags, we had four bags of merch. So there's like, three bags are merch, one bag's our clothes. They're big rolly bags, four-wheeled bags. So she touched two handles, and pushes two on each side of her and goes and checks all of our bags in while I go park the car in the economy lot or return the rental car. Then I carry my guitar, my backpack around so that I don't have to do that. She goes and checks all four bags in, awesome. Tags them. Like, that's nails, man. That's unbelievable.
Yep.
I'm probably abusing her. Let's be honest.
This is more than she asked for in the vows, for sure. But she's great, man. She's great. And that's awesome. I'm glad you had a good time. So was the cheesesteak everything you thought it'd be and more?
It's good. You know, it's a different level there. It's kind of like people say, barbecue, but you know they live in like Tulsa and you're like, you don't have barbecue. Come to Nashville. Like Tennessee barbecue is a good level of barbecue.
Yeah.
Texas is good barbecue. But there's just certain places where you can't get good like Mexican food.
Right.
You know, like I went to San Diego and they're like right above Mexico. Like it's Mexican food. It's the best fajitas you ever had. It's really good. And I think when you go to Philly, you got to have a cheesesteak. But even there, there's levels of like, where'd you go? People want to know that live there. Where'd you go? You went to Tony's? Oh, original Tony's or Fat Tony's? You know, they want to know which Tony's.
But same guy. He ate more cheesesteaks between the first and second opening. Did you have your cheesesteak out of curiosity with the tomato sauce or without it?
No, Lord, don't.
Because you know some do that.
Really?
Yes.
Well, I've seen the Cheese Whiz instead of provolone. I get provolone, grilled onions, sauteed onions, and then like just a nice hoagie roll.
Yeah.
We had to find a place that had a gluten-free roll for curry.
Yeah.
And so that's a very particular thing. And it was really good. Her sandwich was good too. But yeah, I like Philly. Philly's just a cool place because it's like, and it's a history. You've never been, right? It's amazing to me as a U.S. history buff.
Where was I going?
It's the original capital.
Did I tell you I was going to Boston or Philly? That we canceled the trips. I can't remember. We had an Airbnb booked and everything and had to cancel. We ended up going to French Lick, Indiana instead. It just was too much to pull off.
That's your number two. It's always your number two.
Yeah, you know. Like you're going to.
Larry Bird Museum.
No. You know, I've been to D.C. several times.
Yeah, that's great.
Got a book that I'm going to probably start on that the author lives near D.C. I may have to make a few trips.
Oh, you
got to
do that
there.
Then.
But no,
research,
I haven't.
Air quotes.
Yeah, I haven't. And I have a, like, okay, in my bag, like, I have several big, like, nerdy things I'm ready just to go sit somewhere, walk around, see things, read books about it. And I mean, I don't know. You know, you ever just sit back and think about what it is you really just would love to do if you could just do it, not to be productive or.
Right.
Again, I know building the kingdom of God.
You think about that stuff. I always think of you as somebody who doesn't think like that.
Well, I do. Like, I love doing what I do. It's not that.
But I think it bothers you. It hurts you to think that you're not being productive.
It does. And that's something I'm trying to get healthier at.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so, I mean, one, I think everywhere we are, I think loving my wife well and resting is also building the kingdom of God. There's a time to do that. There's a time to rest.
You're recharging.
Well. Yeah. I don't want to be at the place. I hate the idea that I need quote unquote vacations. I hate that I need to vacate. I need to get out of here.
Yeah.
Like I don't have that holiday. We talked about that before. I don't live well finding a weekly kind of rest or Sabbath. I'm trying to get better at that. Even a daily thing, you know, we have a pretty good routine of daily, but I still feel, I don't know, like that I'm moving towards always a vacation, and I'd like to not live in that mindset. But when I really do kind of dream of things, it almost always puts me on a cruise ship almost always puts me at a beach or puts me somewhere where there's just a lot of time, a lot of quiet, not required of not things, things not quite required of me. I may have headphones in listening to my favorite music, and I get to run and I get to read like those. And I get to write a little bit if I want to, not to be productive.
This sounds like the Twilight Zone. Remember the Twilight Zone, Burgess Meredith, Time Enough at Last?
Yes.
So he's this guy who, he's a bookworm.
Yep.
And I think he's a librarian or something, but he's basically, he's always yelling at people. And he's like, his whole goal is like, finally. And I think something happens where he has time enough at last to read all these books.
Yeah.
And then he's...
Well, the world, it's something like it
the world ends or something, right? He's by himself. He's got all these books. He's like, finally, it's quiet. He puts on his glasses to read. They fall off his face and they shatter. And it's like, and that's the big Twilight Zone. Gosh,
it's like the guy in the bunker with the cans and no can opener. Mm. But
is that a Twilight Zone?
I don't know.
Just hit it with a brick.
Do find some other way. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not like pure introvert.
Yeah.
I want my family. I want to do events and have fun with them. I love that.
Yeah.
I want to eat. And Laura and I really love to try food experiences. And so does Sadie. That's what's great. I want to see things with them, share. I don't like to share things alone. Again, we talked about it before. Being to Iceland or being on trips where I'm seeing amazing things around the world and not having family with me there to experience it, is I struggle with that. So in all of those, I guess, fantasies, they're with me. Sometimes, like, I want a week with my wife. Okay, here's the dream, and we're going to get to an interview. But the dream for me, okay.
Let's keep this PG, John.
At 20 years of marriage, which is next year.
You want to take a 20-day? You
so,
told me this.
Yes, I want to take 20 days. Like, I've never taken...
Well, why don't you just do it?
I'm doing it. I'm gonna find a way to. Well, why don't I just do it? Because it's dang expensive. That's the main reason.
That's true.
But I want to find a way.
But you could do 20 days in French Lick. You have to go to Laos.
Well, but I want. Here's what I really
Tahiti.
What I really want to do. What I really want to do, and I don't know if I can. Like, I want to take a week.
Yeah.
With just me and my wife, because it's anniversary.
Right.
Just a week, me and my wife. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, say we cruise across, maybe 10 days, cruise across the Atlantic kind of thing. And then maybe cruise back. It's a 10-day over and back kind of thing. Or I don't know where we're going to go. But then when we land, this sounds so, this is so first world spoiled. This is why I struggle to share it. I'm really ashamed of the things that I dream about sometimes. But then I get back and then like grandparents or somebody bring Sadie to us.
Are they holding signs at the airport when you land?
That's fine. Okay, that's fine. Welcome home, Daddy. You know, whatever, Sadie could be really excited. Yeah. And then 10 days would be a long time to be away from Sadie, okay? That's hard. But 7 maybe we could do. And then, though, Sadie joins us, and we have another 10 days. There's the 20 days. I mean, I can't even imagine because it takes me 5 days. 5 days at the beach or whatever, I'm just beginning to breathe. The first couple days, I'm fine. I do it. But I'm dealing with all kinds. I'm real introspective. Sometimes I have to fight moodiness. I really do. I don't know how to stop. And then about like day 5, I'm like, I'm feeling it. I'm taking runs in the afternoon.
Then it's time to come back.
And then it's time to pack, you know. And then I'm already thinking about moving everything back. So I want to get to the 5-day mark and be like, wow, I'm not even a third. And then I want to get to the 7-day mark and be like, oh my gosh.
Now I got to pick up this kid. No, I'm just kidding.
No, I'd love to.
What
have
if
it with me.
That's what I'm saying? Is what if you're being protected from that other day? Like, what if you get to that and it's like, oh, this wasn't what I thought.
I would like to try
you
that and
know.
See. Yeah,
it's like people that say money can't buy you happiness. It's like, well, I'd like to see. I want to see for myself. Did you ever tell you the quote about David Lee Roth? Somebody said money can't buy happiness. He said nobody will buy a boat, and boat can pull up right beside happiness.
That's funny. Well, I don't know, listeners. I'm open to insight.
You need ideas.
Here.
What's a 20 day?
You know, I really want to do is one of those Viking river cruises in Europe that go to like
Tim did one of those with his wife Tim and Heather
ports,
Tim Hawkins. Yeah,
because I'm a huge history guy. I want to go see. I'd love to take
get you one of those horned helmets. Be all Nordic.
Oh, it'd be great.
Come back with your Viking name.
I look just like a Viking.
Lars Gunstafsson. Oh.
But I really want to see Rome. I really want to see Rome. Yeah. She really wants to see Tuscany. You know, I could take or leave Paris. I don't know why, but I think I probably need to. But I want to see
Eiffel Tower.
I want to see London. I wouldn't mind going into Ireland.
Yeah.
I would like. I think I'd enjoy Spain.
Yeah.
And I think I would enjoy Germany. Like, I'd like to go see Germany and maybe head up into Austria. You know, into Switzerland, that area. So I mean, you know, a few little things that I'd like to try.
That's a big trip. That's 20 days right there, John.
Well. Maybe, but I mean, part of me wants to go like take 10 days, pick some things, try to get a little bit of everything, and then 10 days of decompression in a tropical, you know, I'm just sitting. So now
thinking about the cold, rainy England,
and I get on the boat from Europe across the Atlantic and I have a couple days to think about it while we're traveling. Then I go, it's a lot. It's a lot, I'm taking donations right now for a 20 year, but then I want to do it like, at 25, I take 25 days.
Yeah.
And then at 30, I take 30. So on the fives, I'm going to start doing crazy things. Why not? You know, I mean, I see people that go in winter places and all those things. But the main reason is because I'm not independently wealthy and I still have a job that requires things of me. Yeah. But you know what? I could do 20 and I'm going to see. And if I don't have a job when I get back, then actually they're going to. I would get permission. I would get
sabbatical.
Permission.
That's what you call it.
Well, yes, I'm fine with calling it that if that helps.
It's a sabbatical.
I don't feel like I have to have it. Like I'm something's wrong if I don't.
But no, it's just good. It's good I think it's good. The churches are starting to recognize that pastors get burned out and they need a break.
I don't feel burned out. I feel great.
You don't want to wait until you feel it, John. You can't. You could be teetering on the edge.
Yeah, it's kind of like waiting till you're in crisis to go to counseling. Like, you know what? You should be counseling with people in community all the time.
I talk about that when I do marriage conferences. I always say I grew up in a household that we did not maintain vehicles. We just waited till lights came on.
Right.
And that's what marriages do. And so I always say, it's so good that you're here.
Yep.
And some of you guys are here and you're like, we're fine. That's what you want to do. You want to don't wait till the light comes on.
Well, it's like waiting to exercise whenever you have a heart attack. Like, do it now. So I want to rest and do some things, especially as my kid gets older. I want some big experiences. You know, we just took her to Chattanooga last weekend for a volleyball tournament.
Yeah.
But we stayed in an Airbnb. I know this sounds funny, but Sadie's never been in she's never stayed in an old house. You know, I grew up in an older home. I've been places, stayed places, college dorms, other things. Like, she's lived in two houses.
Right.
The first one we built, and the second one was built in like 02. And so, like, we stayed in an Airbnb on that north side of the river up the hill there, historic kind of part. It's a lot like East Nashville. It's being gentrified, all those things. We stayed in a house that was probably built in 1935.
Uh-huh.
So all the door frames are crooked. They don't close right. You literally can't walk on the hardwood without it just creaking. There's a full basement underneath that's just storage. Of course, the hot water heater was out. I have to go down there in the middle of this huge basement down. And she was very, at first, like, I don't know if I like this.
This is haunted, Daddy. What have you done?
It feels dirty even because it's old, you know, but by the end, you could tell she had settled in. It's an experience. Like, hey, you know, every house is not like your house, you know, and they're not all – you're born in
Yeah, you're trying to show her that there's charm to something that's built before.
And it was a great house, and we had a great time. Then we took her to a Brazilian steakhouse, and so been that kid, I mean – But they came around.
She threw back some slabs of meat.
She threw back the meats, man, and just. Huh. But her favorite was the grilled pineapple. If you ask her, what was your favorite thing? It was grilled pineapple. And so, but we just did love, and we drove around and saw the walking bridge, and took her up to Rembrandt's, our favorite little coffee shop up there that we used to go to all the time.
Oh yeah, of course, that's great.
You know, experiences, man. I mean, she only got 8 more years till she graduates. That's crazy. You know, like.
Yeah.
And so, we want to do some things if we can, and not that. We're not entitled to those things. We understand. We want to be good stewards.
Look, John, put it on GoFundMe. I'll kick in a few shekels.
John's 20. Yeah. Yep.
Good grief.
Well, it's probably time, Johnny. Listen, I want to tell you guys who you're about to hear from, and we're so excited that he was able to join us today because, I mean, literally the guy travels more days a year than anyone that I know.
Yeah.
Anyone that I know. And so he was able to jump on a call while he was driving with us. It's our good friend, Reggie Dabbs. Reggie is considered to be the number one public school speaker in the world in that he's the most recognizable name probably you've never heard of because a lot of people have. But if you've never heard of him, it's because Reggie doesn't want to be known. He wants to be in a school you've never heard of.
Yeah, he's got a very personal kind of ministry.
Yeah.
Yeah. He speaks to a group of students, and he's just lived his life that way. individual groups at a time, their lives are impacted by him, and that's kind of really super cool.
Yeah, he wants to be in that no-name school in the middle of rural Minnesota that no one's going to go to, that no big name's going to find. He's going to be there. Probably has been there. And he does that. He's done it for like – he's going to tell us how many years, but it's crazy. His wife, Michelle, I mean, she is fantastic. His son, Dominic, just a great, great family. And honestly, you need to go – you can go to Reggie Dabb's website. Just go Google him, and you'll find all kinds of things on YouTube, kids' videos about him. He's also a huge event speaker, speaks at all the major events.
Yeah, he'd be great to bring to your school if you can get on the waiting list. And John has a special relationship with Reggie because one of your first – published books, right, was as a co-write with Reggie to tell his story.
Reggie, I was a youth pastor. Reggie was in Wilson County. I almost told the story on the interview, but we didn't have time. But we were in Mount Juliet High School, and I had to pull every string possible to get Reggie in there because they don't do that because the school system had been sued before for a guy who shared faith when he shouldn't have. So we were standing. We somehow did it. I'll never forget this. Standing in the gym, which is, Johnny, you know this as a performer, and I know this as a speaker. It's a horrible place to speak. A gym is the worst place to be. Yeah. It's echoey. Here, let's make it even worse. He was in the gym in the round. They were around him on all sides.
Oh, man.
Over 2,000 high school students in Mount Juliet High School, and it was so loud you couldn't hear anything. And I was standing on the gym floor next to the principal, who was so nervous. It's the first religious guy, but I promised him he's not going to share anything religious. First guy they brought in since they've been sued in years, and he turns to me and he says, "Hey, I just want you to know, if I go down, you're going down with me." I kid you not. The principal said that to me, and I was like, "I promise it's going to be great." And those kids were wild, and I've been with Reggie so many times, and I've never seen anyone like it. Anyone like it.
Mm-hmm.
He had him in 10 seconds.
Yeah.
10 seconds he had him. And he never loses him. No. Had him the whole time. He's also, we didn't even talk about this, he's a gifted saxophone player.
Yeah.
Plays a soprano sax, and he'll often play. He has all kinds of fun things. He's going to talk about his adoption story, but he was adopted by his teacher. He doesn't mention that. So that's one of the reasons he loves going to school. His mom's teacher adopted him. And he didn't even know that it was his mom's teacher until years into his life. But it's a huge reason he has a heart for schools and for going into schools and to reaching kids.
Yeah, you're right about Reggie. The first time I saw him speak at a school, and then I went on like a week-long tour with him one time where I did three schools in Chattanooga with him, and then he did a rally on the Wednesday night at a church. And I was there for all of them, and then I did comedy on the Wednesday night thing, opening for him. And I was just starting out in comedy, and it really kind of made me realize the level of focus you have to have. And it also, I was so inspired to see somebody doing 100% what they were built to do.
Yeah.
It was like watching Muhammad Ali in his prime.
Yeah.
It was like, this is 100% what his gifting is, and he figured it out, and he got great at it, and now he's just going to ride this wave, and he's going to help as many people as he can. It was so fascinating, and he's so encouraging. Even then, he was always encouraging about, oh, you're so funny, just keep doing what you're doing. And I'd probably done 20 shows back then, you know.
Well, he says that in the interview some, but I will never forget. I was in the office, it's across from the office we're in right now, and I was sitting there. I'd written several books that had never gone anywhere. I just felt led to write, and Reggie walked into my office, and it was my pastor and friend who we're going to have on the podcast soon, by the way, Andrew, and he mentions him, just a great friend. They were college roommates, suite mates, something, and he put that bug in his ear, and Reggie walked into my office and said, "Hey, man, I want you to write my book." I'd never thought about collaborating before that moment.
Huh.
And it was, and I knew, and we'd been in schools, but I knew he had a special story, and we trusted each other, knew each other. And that was my jump into where God's changed my life and gave me a lot of my purpose in partnering with people to help them find their voice for their stories and their messages. And so, yeah, I learned all about it. We did it with no agent, it's a very unheard of thing what we did. And we just happened to have... We wrote the book. Reggie was like, "Hey, I got a guy in Jersey. We can print him up and we'll sell." He's just going to just sell it, you know. And I remember telling him, I was like, "Well, I live in Nashville. Let's just see what God does. Let's just, see." So I started putting feelers out and honestly had forgotten that a kid in my youth group that their dad worked for Thomas Nelson.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of reached out to him the proposal. And he loved it, and he was a salesperson, but his boss happened to be the guy who would do this book, because there's all kinds of of different teams within a publishing.
Yeah.
And he walked it up the elevator. Well, he got on the elevator and pushed the button, I'm sure.
Right.
Went don't upstairs because, there's all these just piles of submissions. And basically, I bypassed all of those with this book. And we had a publishing deal with the largest Christian publisher in the world in like 2 weeks. And it was just totally a God thing. You guys need to go read Reggie. People still tell us sometimes that Reggie is probably one of their favorite books I've ever worked on. And hear his story of this. He's not a guy, you said, he came into what he's good at. He was a guy that was made fun of. He was a guy that really struggled in school, really struggled identity, felt suicidal a lot in his life, felt lost when he figured out that he was adopted, felt very abandoned, struggled in college. I mean, it's not the story that you would think, and he shares a lot of that in his public school times, but when you hear him today, to understand where he has come from, to understand what has happened in his life for him to overcome and come to that point of being that just guy who's willing to give hope to anybody because he was a guy who had no hope. And he's just so funny, so amazing. I do encourage you guys to go and check him out. But let's go ahead and go to the interview and hear from our good friend, Reggie Dabbs. Hey, me and Johnny are here with our good friend, Mr. Reggie Dabbs. How you doing, Reggie?
What's up, my brother?
Hey, man. tell us, where in the world is Reggie?
Well, Reggie's in the middle of nowhere. I saw three cows and a goat. I'm driving from Greenville, Tennessee to Knoxville, Tennessee. And I'm pretty much in the middle of nowhere, to be honest with you.
And you grew up in Knoxville, right?
Yeah.
That's cool.
That's hometown.
Going home.
Hometown.
Dude, our Vols, you think we make it past the first weekend? Where are we going?
Come on, man. We got this. I'm going at least Final Four this year.
Okay.
And I'm just saying, if we can get past Buffalo, we'll be all right.
That Auburn game scared me, though, because if we face a team that shoots threes well, and I think John's just read that Colgate is number one in threes since February in all of college basketball.
Yeah,
but they're scared. They're scared.
That's true.
They've never been there before.
I told John this morning, I read a tweet from one of the Alabama fan accounts on Twitter, and it said, "This will be the first introduction many Tennessee fans have to Colgate."
Okay, that's funny.
That's funny. It's hateful and it's funny.
Hey, and not only that, though, but it's coming from Alabama. Their most famous alumni is Forrest Gump. Okay,
that's true.
I'm just saying.
That's true.
Oh, man. Well, I'm pretty nervous about it. I hate that we had the best season in history and we brought home no banners at all and that Auburn spoiled them both. So regular season and then the SEC championship. I mean, I personally think, Reggie, that we gave our all against Kentucky and we had nothing left. What do you think?
Yeah, but, and you know, when you want to lose then, if you're looking at the big picture, you want to lose when they lost.
Yeah.
And they learn from it. Even they're saying, you know, we learned a lot from losing, and then you become better, and we're ready.
Hope the
players are saying they're ready, so that'll be good.
So
it'll be interesting.
So for our listeners who don't know, Reggie Dabbs is one of the most sought after school speakers and public speakers in the nation, in the world even. Like, you spend a month in New Zealand, don't you? Like a year every year.
Oh, yeah.
So Reggie's like the man to come to your school. He talks about bullying, and he does an anti-drug message, and then he usually does a rally in the city that later that week and shares his faith. And I got to travel with you some. We actually shared a story, Reggie, about, because somebody asked a question of what my worst bombing was. What's the worst time I ever bombed? And I told the story about the rally I did with you where the guy wanted me to come out and do comedy after the altar call. Do you remember that?
Yeah. I remember that. And before it even happened, we looked at each other and went, "This is not going to work."
Dude, I was young and dumb. I was like, maybe my jokes will be good enough to get out of this. And they were not.
Yeah, he talks about you riding home. There was the ride back.
I was your ride back to Nashville.
Yeah, you were. Yeah,
and
you
so
were.
I was like, man, I got to sit here with this guy. And you were like, man, they were tough. And I was like, yeah, they were, Rich.
Oh, I thought you forgot about that one.
Oh, no, you never forget that stuff, man. You forget the good ones. You forget the good audiences. You never forget the guy folding his arms that you couldn't make laugh for an hour.
Oh, my goodness.
There's always one guy.
That was not a good night. That was really bad.
What is your bad experience? Because I know you've been in a million schools, and, like, give me something that you were like, man, I just didn't have it, or Like, I know you've been in schools where there's been, like, there's a history of gang violence and you're kind of nervous going in with your message. Like, what kind of experiences have you had?
Oh, I just tell my story first.
Yeah.
You don't even try to be funny. You just tell your story. Grew up in foster care.
Mm-hmm.
Your mom gave you away. And then you'd be funny at the very end.
Yeah.
But my worst experience is when I call out what I'm going to do wrong and I do it anyway.
Oh.
That's when you're on the stage right before it starts and you go, psh, orchestra pit. I better make sure I don't fall. And you fall in the orchestra pit. And literally, while you're falling, I'm thinking to myself, where am I? Because it was empty. The whole orchestra pit empty.
So you really did.
For the right-hand side.
Oh, no.
Right-hand side, they had 3 timpani drums. They only have 2 timpani drums now. Yeah. And no, I'm telling you, it was like aluminum foil. It just folded up, dude. It was done. It was not good.
What do you do after you fall on a timpani drum in an orchestra pit? How do you?
Did you hit a cymbal on the way down, like a crash?
Well, no. It was just 3 timpani drums. It was, and you know, when I landed, and literally, I realized I wasn't that hurt.
Yeah.
And I had the microphone. I see it. And I go, oh, and everybody's rolling, laughing,
I
did it on purpose.
Yeah.
And then I get up, and that's when the pain came, and I cut my left cheek, which we don't want to talk about.
Oh, no.
I had to get stitches after.
Yeah, because your face bleeds the worst. Your face and your head will bleed.
I don't know if he's
you.
Talking about his face or not.
Yeah.
Oh, you cut the other cheek.
Yeah,
man, you turn the other cheek. Oh, no, dude.
Yeah, that bleeds, good. Too. It does. It really does. But, hey, that's about as bad as it gets right there.
Oh,
and then,
gosh.
Of course, you know, first it's the when you go to the doctor and the hospital and they say, hey, how did this happen? And you say it. Then you go, and then that was the nurse. Then there's the doctor. Hey, man, how did this happen? And you tell him. Then there's the lady giving you the shot to numb the cheek. How did this happen? So by about the 4th time, you're just like, forget this. And then there's the janitor that comes in and goes, hey, are you the guy?
That's amazing.
It doesn't get any better than that.
Yeah, dude, that's crazy.
That's about as bad as it gets.
Well, dude, I mean, you do, how many shows, how many events, assemblies and all do you speak a year at?
We do 1 million people every year.
My goodness, dude.
Yeah.
Reggie, I always estimate you're what, about 300 days a year, probably at least, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, right now.
Man,
and you just got to help people as much as you can.
So you said a little bit about your story. Pretend that we're, you know, at an assembly. Give us give us your 5 minutes. Give us okay, man, we just sat down. You pulled yourself out of the orchestra pit. And now tell us what Reggie Dabbs is going to tell us. Give us your 3 to 5 minute talk real quick, if you don't mind, for our listeners.
Oh, okay. No, I don't mind. I don't mind at all. Well, the first thing you have to do is if I don't fall in the orchestra pit, that actually gets everybody's attention.
Yeah.
But if I don't do that, my whole thing is the meaning of life. There's 2 things in life you got to always remember. Number 1, boys and girls are different.
Right.
There you go. Yeah, and if for example, if 1 girl got to go to the bathroom, 2 girls get to go with her. You'll never hear a boy go, ooh, I got to go. Hey, Steve, let's go pee-pee. It ain't happening, all right? And that one, too. Anybody ever get up in the morning, get your toothbrush and toothpaste, go to put it in your mouth, and the toothpaste falls off? And all of a sudden, what do? Girls, wash it out of the sink, get more toothpaste, start over. Boys, we scoop it up. That's what we do. Who cares if your daddy shaved that morning? Scoop it up anyway. And everybody's starting to laugh. And then I start talking about how that number 2 in the meaning of life is a roller coaster. I love roller coasters. They go so fast, it makes my fat go backwards. I'm skinny again. I love roller coasters. One time I got stuck upside down, and the girl in front of me, she threw up, and the wind was blowing in my direction. I can't duck. And if I could duck, my belly button would give me a hickey on my forehead. That ain't good. But that's what life is. Some days you're on top of the hill and everything's great. Some days you're going downhill so fast you want to quit. But never give up on life, because they'll fix the ride. The only question is, will you be on the ride when they fix it? So the phrase is never give up. So come on, boys, say never give up. Y'all got to say never give up.
Never give up. Come on, Johnny.
I'm into him. I'm transfixed.
Yeah, thanks, man. That's good. That's really good. Then I tell my story. And I ask 2 questions. The first question is, have you ever had something happen in your past that you wish you could change, but you know you never will? The second question is, you ever wake up at 3, 4, or 5 o'clock in the morning, you're wide awake, and every time you close your eyes, you go back to sleep. It's like a movie in your head from something in your past you wish you could forget. And everybody raised their hand.
Right.
And then I tell them mine, that when I was 8 years old, I was told I was in foster care. That at 8 years old, I was told that my mom kept my brother and my two sisters, but she gave me away because she said I was a mistake. And at 8 years old, was from 8 to 21, I didn't want to live anymore. And I do my best to explain that. And how I do it is, have you ever sat in the middle of a crowd surrounded by people, but deep inside, you're all alone? And every time, people raise their hands.
Yeah.
Then I say, you ever wake up at 3, 4, 5 in the morning, and every time you close your eyes and go back to sleep, it's like a movie from something in your past, and you realize if anybody finds out who you really are, they won't be your friend anymore. Mm. And everybody raises their hand. I said, but you got to understand, there's somebody who will love you just the way you are. And there's always people in your life that will love you just the way you are. So you can't give up. No matter what happens in your past is your history, but your future is your destiny. Mm. And that was it in 2 minutes and 57 seconds.
It's so good. Oh, dude, great. I'm speaking a lot of Sunday mornings now too, Reggie. And so I reference you, but I tell that story because one of my messages too is like, don't give up. I always talk about, like, I'd say when Adam was in the Garden of Eden and he sinned, God came and he said, where are you? And so I asked that question of my audience to say, where are you with God? Like, get real with God. And then the last part I say is never give up. And I talk about your roller coaster analogy, and I say, my good buddy Reg, some of these people know you. They're like, they perk up when I say your name. And I use the reference of me and John ran a half marathon together in 2002, and we didn't finish even anywhere close to first. We finished near the last. There were some people behind us. I didn't know how many. And I say, I was 243. John was 244 out of, and I looked on the bottom of the page at the results. It said 258 runners. I was like, ugh, that's not very good. But then, like, I'm trying to motivate myself to go train again and get in shape again this year. So I say, I go look at those race results again because they're still online somewhere. And I said 243, 244 out of 258 runners. But then I saw a number I'd never seen before, and it was the number of people who started the race but didn't finish it. And it was like 350 people. So I called John. I said, John, remember that race we did? And he said, yeah. And I said, we finished ahead of everybody that quit.
There you go.
And so I never would have thought of that analogy if I hadn't traveled with you and you gave that roller coaster thing of like, will you be on the ride when they fix the ride? It's so powerful. And so I give you props for that. It's very inspirational, man.
Oh, that's
it's
awesome.
Good stuff.
That is great. Hey, you just can't give up no matter what.
Yeah.
And dude, life is full of reasons to quit.
Yeah.
Like every corner, every time you turn a corner, there's an exit telling you to get off. There's a sign saying, you know, food here, gas here, lodging here.
Right.
But if you keep going, you're going to get to your destination a lot quicker than if you got off that exit.
Yeah.
And you just got to stay on the highway. You just got to stay on the road of life and let it happen.
Yeah, man. Well, dude, you've been doing this a long time, man. It's so cool to think of, like, the stability and the consistency with which you do your ministry, and you've meant a lot to a lot of different people. That's what's cool. Reggie's one of these people. I always tell John, Reggie's one of these people that when you're in a room with him, he makes you feel like he's your best friend.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's a very special kind of gift that not everybody has.
Yeah. And, you know, Reggie, you and I have done a couple book projects together. And, you know, I constantly am seeing the kids that are posting to your Facebook page and other things. You know, we kind of manage some of that together. And, I mean, daily. In fact, I get notifications to my phone off of your pages. And like, at least 35 a day or so, I get, hey, thank you for coming to my school today. I got them this morning. Hey, thank you for coming and speaking hope to me about this. Hey, thank you for coming and doing this. And it's adults, it's teachers, it's students, it's then people who are at other events that you speak at night. And, you know, and they're finding this value. You're doing what God made us all to do. You're communicating that value that they already have of being made in the image of the Creator to them that they've somehow lost or forgotten because of the things in this life that they faced. And you're reminding them, you know, it's more than motivation. Like there's always that thing you hear with people when they talk about Reggie. It's like, we don't know what it is about Reggie. If they don't know about your faith, we don't know what it is about Reggie that makes him so effective. And we know what it is. You know, you've got, you're sharing your brokenness about what, you know, your story and what God has done in that. And it just resonates with people because brokenness is that – we talk about that on the podcast a lot. Brokenness is that place from which the things in our life, if we're this jar, that, you know, then things flow out of those broken places. And you've just been a guy who has not hidden your broken places, but instead you allow those things to seep through into other people.
Yeah.
And that's something everybody has. Everybody has that day they wish had never happened, that moment they wish they could go back and change. And that's the point of connection for humanity, period.
Yeah.
And if we can all realize, you know, no one's better than you, no one's worse than you, they're just on a different place in that highway that we're all called life.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can help each other, then we can make that highway a little easier to travel down. And that's what it's all about. I literally have taken the idea of I am second and live. That's pretty much it. I don't need nothing. I don't want nobody to give me anything. You know, I have my wife. I have my son. I have this. They say it's a career, but it's helping other people win. And watching that is pretty much the most important thing I think I'll ever do is be second place and watch other people win. I don't mind doing that. And I think I found my peace in that, in my personal life, instead of striving to, I got to win, got to get there, got to make this and that happen. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I think there was a time in my life when I needed that, that drive to do a million kids a year, to keep stand in front of people and give them hope. There was a drive there. But now I'm looking at that going, it's about Wednesday, you know, Wednesday afternoon. It's about Johnny. It's about John. And it's about a podcast. And it's about just living in this moment. Now, it's an honor that you guys would want me to be on this with you. And I'm living in that moment right now. And I found out it's a lot easier to live in the moment than it is to plan for tomorrow.
Yeah, that's good.
Oh, yeah, man.
Hey, tell me this. This is something I'm curious about because you've seen students across a generation, really. You've been doing this for, well, how long?
35 years.
So John and I talk a lot about the impact of social media on our lives, and John was a student pastor as well. What are you seeing? How is social media affecting, I mean, folks' empathy, self-esteem, et cetera, like that, the chaos that it's wreaking? What are you seeing, and how does it affect your approach, if any?
It's good and bad, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
The bad, of course, is people are willing to say stuff, pushing a phone pad or a computer key.
Yeah.
They're saying stuff they would never say face-to-face to people.
Right.
Or making comments that they really don't mean, but they're just throwing out there to see what kind of reaction they'll get.
Yeah.
When other people who are reading those things are taking it literal, and it's changing their lives and their future and everything about them. And that's the bad part about it. The great part is that you're able to communicate more than just to the people in the room with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, doing an assembly program, there may be 2,500 kids in the auditorium, but there's about 180 kids who have their phones on recording me who are going to post it later.
Huh.
And all of a sudden, 2,500 becomes 13,000, 15,000, 18,000. So the message of hope that we're giving is multiplied, you know, exponentially because of the number of kids who are using those devices. But we need to teach kids to be kind. That's the basic motivational part of this. Be kind in everything you do. You could be the hero every second of your day, the way you text, the way you speak, the way you live. And we're just trying our best, you know, one school at a time, one kid at a time, to show them that, hey, you can do this. This is important, that you be the hero, even in your texting world.
Yeah, it's great, man.
You know, Johnny talks about that a lot on the podcast. He says, you know, when he was younger, Johnny, I may butcher your quote, but...
There's a quote that says, when I was young, I was impressed by clever people. Now that I'm older, I'm impressed by kind people.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That is very...
Yeah, it's. I mean, I think that's cool. And like you say, man, it's kids, they need that contemplation that we had when we grew up. We grew up bored. We didn't have cell phones. Kids aren't bored now, so that they don't contemplate what they're doing as much. They just kind of they fire the gun and then wait. You know, they don't ready. It's not ready, aim, fire. It's ready, fire, then aim, and hope it didn't hit you wrong. And the contemplation of texting and social media, I'm fascinated by that. And as somebody who's, you see every walk of life with these kids. I mean, you go into poor schools, you go into private schools, you go into schools in other countries. And so, I was fascinated by your take on that. It's good stuff.
Yeah. And we just got to decide, you know, not only how we're going to use it, but how we're going to display it. And I'll be honest with you. I've had some major speakers and entertainers and they look at me at events and they go, bro, if you're not on the road, you would never have a social media. I said, no, because my private life is my private life. Mm-hmm. And that's just the way I do that. And they just laugh. And they go, well, how do you keep it separate? I said, you think before you post. And that's all you got to do. And they go, and they were asking me, like, who's your publicist? Or who do you have? And I'm like, well, are you kidding me? I said, dude, I just think before I post.
Yeah.
And it's important because it can cause problems.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I mean, Reggie, tell us, what are you, so, you know, you've been telling your story, you've been doing it 35 years. I love that you're talking about, you know, the I am second, being that person there to serve others. Is there anything else for students or for the generation or other things you're sharing right now that you say is, hey, this is a now thing I feel like everybody needs to hear, that's maybe new, maybe, you know, changing with, in terms of what's happening in our world, those kinds of things as people, you know, are struggling with hope. Is there anything new that you're adding to it that you'd want to share with our listeners today?
I did an event not too long ago, and ever since I did it, I've added one little segment to every assembly program. I literally stop and I say to every boy wears a mask. Every boy pretends everything's good when it's bad, happy when it's sad, right when it's wrong. But your mask is going to fall. And every boy needs to know what to do when that mask falls. And then I say to every girl that the world's coming after you, and it's not good. It's going to hurt. And Mac and Clinique don't make a makeup to cover that kind of pain. Mm-hmm. So no matter who you are, when everything starts running or when your mask falls, you need to know what to do. And I tell them what to do. And what it is simply this, that no matter what situation you end up in, no matter how bad your mask falls or how much the makeup's running, love is going to be there. And there's going to always be somebody there who will love you just the way you are. And you got to let people love you. The biggest mistake is we don't let nobody in. We hear people say, oh, they said they love me, they love me, they love me. And so it's, I'm not going to, I don't care. And the reason people don't care is because they've let people in before and they've hurt them and they've disappointed them and they've let them down. Yeah. But we can't, just because we've been hurt once, we can't give up on love. Because if we give up on love, we're giving up on life.
Yeah. Well, that's good. And, you know, and you and I in our Just Keep Breathing book, you know, your real purpose in that was to equip people. Because, I mean, you're one guy. And there's so many people, you always say that you can be that hope today. And they're always going to be those who are going to reach out to you and ask for you to give them a special expression of that hope. But for the most part, you're going to have to get in your car and drive from Greenville to Knoxville to Kentucky and keep doing the thing where you go. But for the people who are there, who remain, I think that's a great message. Hey, well, whatever it is, you know, find a way not just to love, but to be loved. And as people take in that, I mean, understanding that is the message of the gospel, like that's the big message, is that, hey, there is someone who loves you, who already knew what was wrong with you, who was willing to sacrifice for you when you didn't deserve it and when you didn't even want it or ask for it. And it's that otherworldly love that even if you in a public school aren't able to name the name of Christ, but you're giving that gospel message in a way that, and again, we talk about Reggie reclaiming the word gospel a lot on here because we're all like, oh man, we hear the gospel, we've heard it our whole lives, and people kind of roll their eyes and stop listening, but it's really radical. Like it's really a crazy message of, you know, rescue and of an undeserved love that's found from someone else who is pursuing you when you're not even asking to be pursued. And so I love that you're equipping people not just to hear that message, but to begin to live that message out there with others.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And that's what we do. And you know what? And I know it might sound a little weird, or it might cause more controversy. Is I've found out in my 35 years, I might not be the guy who introduces people to Jesus. I might be the guy who just gets people to breathe for the next day.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that.
Reggie, do you remember when we were writing? I don't know if I told you this. I think I told you this story. When we were writing Just Keep Breathing, I was struggling a little bit. Not because we love doing things that are positive in schools and all that, but I was struggling. Like, you know, it was one of the first times I'd really written that we weren't sharing, you know, the name of Jesus and that hope. And I really remember in my heart, if I shared this with you, I heard kind of this whisper in my heart of everywhere there's breath, I'm in it.
Yeah.
I heard that in my heart from God, because breath and spirit, I mean, God sustains all life. Like in that message, you're saying, if you're keeping people breathing, I'm in that, like that, I'm in those good things. And that, like you say, that gives them a chance that when the roller coaster stops, you know, and they're at a place in life, you always talk about that and you write about that, that the kids are making decisions at, you know, formative moments that last a lifetime or perhaps end their lifetime. And man, 5 years down the road, they were going to be thinking differently. 5 years down the road, they were going to have a different relationship. 5 years down the road, there's not going to be somebody in high school on their Instagram, you know, bullying them and all those things. Like, they just got to keep breathing. They got to just survive to get to that next point. I love that you're trying to rescue them and keep them going. That's beautiful, man.
Hey, that breath thing too. In Psalms 34, it says that God is close to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit. But in the message, it says, even when you're kicked in if you've been kicked in the gut, God will help you catch your next breath.
Man, that's good.
And that's just, I thought that was just the coolest, you know, translation of that, to where when we can't breathe, he'll help us breathe again. Yeah. And it took me back to the book and the title. And I'm going to tell you, you know, we've written that book a few years now, but it is starting to get a lot of traction now. I don't know if it's because of the world where it's at, but I'm starting to walk in schools and kids are bringing Just Keep Breathing book up to me and say, can you sign this for me? Mm-hmm. And it's all wore out and beat up. And they go, just knowing I'm not alone, this saved my life. And in the past month, it had to be at least 5 times in a public school setting that a kid had that book. So, you know, John, that's just, thanks for helping me get that out there. And again, you know, we don't care, you know, New York Times bestseller list. Yeah, cool, whatever. I just know that book is helping who it's supposed to help.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's why we do what we do. That's why Johnny cracks jokes. That's why he's in churches on Sunday, because we're there for that person for that day to help them keep breathing.
Yeah, man.
Oh, that's awesome, man. Thank you for sharing that, Reggie. It's encouraging. Man, listen, you're one of our favorite people in the whole world. We've actually, so our podcast, I'm sure you listen every week, Reggie, no matter where you are in the world.
No. I do listen to it, though. I'm not joking.
That's good.
Y'all crazy. Sometimes y'all lost your mind.
Yeah, we have.
But, man, we are so excited to finally be able to, I mean, we know you're out doing the great stuff, and it's just been a complete honor for us that you would take the time while you're driving and doing what you're doing. But we're supporting what you're doing and honored to call you friend and praying for you, thinking about you, and always here, man, for anything that you need. And you're always welcome to be a guest, certainly on the podcast. Yeah. But we hope, Johnny was talking about when you might come back to Nashville, because I haven't swung a golf club probably since the last time I was with you. And so that probably needs to happen sometime soon.
That is, it's got to happen. Yeah. Last time I was there, it was just me and Uncle Andrew, because you guys bailed out on us, but that's okay. We'll make that happen.
We'll make it happen, man. Well, have fun on your travels, man, and go Vols.
Hey, all I got to say is this. I'm on a 3-lane highway, and I'm back into civilization, so thank you, boys.
That's good. All right, man. Love you, Reggie. Be good.
Love you, Reg.
Hey, man, go Vols. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, we're back. That was awesome.
Wow.
So cool, and it was so awesome that he made time for us, and thanks again, Reggie. I love the part that I wasn't expecting him to say was a part about how he's learning more to live in the moment.
Yeah.
And he's getting more out of his life now than he would have maybe 5-10 years ago, because he's learning that, you know, just going and talking with a couple of friends on a podcast, or just like being there, not always thinking about tomorrow.
Yeah.
There's scriptures that talk about that. Don't worry. Don't say, we'll go to this town or we'll go to that town.
Yeah.
Because you don't know what tomorrow brings. But I feel like sometimes we get caught up in that. I get caught up in that a lot.
Oh, I do too.
Traveling. Because it's like, I feel like I live from weekend to weekend. Okay, what's coming up this weekend? All right, I'm going to Greenville this weekend. Then I'm going to get in the car. I'm going to drive to all the way to Indianapolis. Got a show on Saturday. Then Sunday I'm in Kokomo, Indiana. Then I drive back home. It's like a, it's like 2,500 mile round trip. I was going to say square miles, but I don't know. It's 2,500 square miles. But it's, I'm thinking of those numbers. I'm thinking of the wear and tear. And it's like, the truth is, I just need to think about today.
Yeah.
There's enough to worry about today. And then there's enough joy in today. And I love that part.
Yeah. And he really is out of, you know, and again, you and I both work with a lot of people who do things creatively, professionally, or do things in ministry professionally.
Yeah.
He is like the most consistent guy I know to do it. And he's also the least opportunistic guy.
Uh-huh.
He's literally thinking about you. Not that he doesn't have that. He said he's worked up to that over his life, but he's not. It's so funny. We talked about before the interview, you know, he wasn't worried about publishing deals.
Yeah.
And he's not worried about publicists and promotion. He wants the message to reach the most number of people. And he's been on every television thing you can imagine. I mean, he's out there doing that, but he doesn't chase things. Like, he's like, look, this is what it is. I know what it is. I want to share hope with as many people as possible. And I want to do it today. And I want to do it with as many individuals. He'd much rather be hanging out at a middle school or a high school talking to the freshman class. I mean, it's one of his favorite things to do is when they submit the class. I remember I brought him in years later and they weren't sure who we hadn't had him in years.
Yeah.
I brought him to another high school in Wilson County and they didn't really know that he was the guy. Like, mm-hmm. people hadn't heard of him. And all they would do is give us like the freshman class that day.
Yeah.
And that's really kind of for a lot of people, that'd be an insult. Like, well, what do you mean? You know, this is the number one public school speaker in the world, and I'm the guy. You should get the whole school. And he was like, dude, that'd be great. And we took him over there, and of course, they were just, I mean, blown away.
Right, and they're like, we wish we did.
Yeah, the principal walked to me like, oh my gosh, why do you? I was like, I tried to tell you, you know, but he loved it because it was about those kids that day, and he saw that as his opportunity. He wasn't trying to impress. He, you know, it was just, hey, this is who God put in front of me today.
Yeah.
And there was probably a purpose and a reason that it wasn't the whole school. And he's just, man, he's just a great guy, and we love Reggie, and we appreciate him being on. And you guys, for real, go check him out and go read his books. I'm not saying that because I helped with him. I'm telling you, man, he's got a story and a message that is special and unique. And I think it'd be worthwhile for you to hear more about him and check him out on social media. He's got a huge Instagram account. He posts a lot about the schools that he's in, post a picture from a school or two almost every day.
Yeah.
So you can really see kids and see what's happening, you know. And follow him when he's international. He is in Australia, New Zealand a lot. He goes to South Africa periodically. He's over in the UK quite a bit as well. And so he's all over the place and just a guy that is someone that we really care about and would promote to you guys to go and follow and be a part of what God's doing in his life. So you're heading out of town, Johnny.
Yeah, homeschool conference again this weekend. And then a fundraiser at Purdue University.
Nice.
And for like a youth camp, I think. And then Kokomo, scenic, exotic Kokomo, Indiana on Sunday.
Mm.
So I'm going to miss you preaching. You're preaching again. I'm going to miss it.
Well, you're always going to preach.
I'm going to watch the live stream, though.
Okay.
Me and Marty will be in the car. We'll be driving.
Dude, I'm doing John chapter 11, Lazarus.
Okay.
Oh, my gosh.
So you're going to do a Carmen, Lazarus Come
I'm
Forth
I'm doing
human
a human
video.
I told my wife that last night. I'm going to play Carmen, Lazarus Come Forth. I'm going to do a solo human video to the whole song with all the different characters there in heaven.
You got to spin. Remember to spin out. That's how you change
character.
I'm going
to spin. We're very, very dizzy. There's a lot of characters.
It really is.
So. But no, I'm excited about it. We just finished our series on the new normal, but we've been in John all last year. We kind of come and go out of the book of John as an expository, textual, continual study because we think there's nothing better than just reading straight scripture. So we do a little bit of both. I'm excited to do that this Sunday. We'll do that for a few weeks heading up to Easter. So, but yeah, you can watch on live stream.
I'm going to watch it, John, and then we'll put the link out to Reggie's stuff and to that.
Yeah, you can go to grovechurchmj.com if you want to watch the live stream and just look at it. There's live and there's watch for old messages. You can go to Reggie Dabbs. I'm like, man.
Is it .com?
I think it's Reggie Dabbs online.
.gov.
You know
ReggieDabbs.gov.
Look, just Google Reggie Dabbs and it'll come up. That's the easier thing. He's a huge name and you'll have no problem finding him. Google Reggie. And obviously, you can always follow Johnny on Twitter.
Yes, Johnny_W or all my social media at JohnnyW.com, JohnnyW.com.
Yep. And, of course, I'm
John Driver.
John with an H.
John Driver.
If you're making out that check for my trip someday, John with an H.
JohnDriver.edu.
JohnDriver.gov.
No.
Opening a new agency.
That's good.
You can go to JohnDriver.com or you can follow me on Twitter or other social media places if you will. Also, don't forget, Talk AB That Pod is our, we're working on some things. Actually, our listenership has gone way up.
And, share it, review it, rate it.
Yeah, and we know we didn't get to any of your questions today because we had the interview, but we'll continue to do that.
Listeners, we love you.
But we will. We're listening, and we're appreciative of the things that you are sharing with us because we get to share with you, and it's exciting. We get to be one big, happy podcasting family. Hey, thanks you guys for listening. We'll be sure to be back next week on
Talk About That.
You're fearfully and wonderfully made. God looks at your heart, not your jean size. Do you know the verses, yet still stress over your body? Oh, I get it. I was raised in church, but I struggled with food, eating disorders, and my body for decades. I'm Heather Creekmore, host of the Compare To You podcast, where we talk about all things body image and comparison from a biblical perspective. We get real about the pressure to focus on appearance in a culture where looks seem to matter most. Whether you're wrestling wrinkles or battling the scale, Compare To You is the show for you. You'll laugh a little and be encouraged a lot. If you're ready to stop comparing and start living, visit lifeaudio.com to listen and subscribe.